Valuetown is a production of ChamMV TV. Find out all show information and details at chamMV.tv. Valuetown is directly supported by listeners like yourself via patreon.com/valuetown.
This is our town.
Welcome!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 214 of Valuetown. I'm ChamMV, and we're starting a little bit later than normal. I know you folks that are listening don't even care, but the folks that are watching live, we're doing a late night, or not late night, but just an evening episode of Valuetown. But I've got two great guests on to join me today, and fresh off the world championships, you know, back from Taiwan, we got Language Hacker and Bloody Face. What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Hey, hello. Good, how are you?
Good, good. Bloodyface, it's your first time on the show. So welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Language Hacker's been here before?
Yeah. Language Hacker's been here. I think, nice. when was it? Like, definitely earlier last year? Or
November, December, maybe?
November, December, yeah. I think somewhere around there. Yeah, so long time coming. You know, you've been like one of the best players like for a while now. So I don't know, you know, why we haven't been able to, or I haven't reached out to you before. So I'm glad to have you finally on, and it's going to be a really, really fun just talking about everything, you know, like world champions and getting your insight on a lot of stuff. But yeah, today, guys, we've got, you can kind of see it on the topic bar here. We've got news, a couple of things, you know, a new type of event league that's coming out, as well as some stuff about solo adventures, some interesting conversations there. World champions, we're going to find out just all both these guys' experiences and just everything. Talk about, you know, obviously the results and just all the crazy awesome matches that went on during the competition. And then Esports Arena, which is going to facilitate some of our specialist talk. Once again, seems to be a reoccurring theme on the show every week or every other week, but it just has to be discussed. You just can't let it go. And then Q&A, of course, questions at the end. If you guys have any questions, you can either save them for Twitch chat or you can tweet them to ValueTownGG and we'll read them out. All right, guys. So, you know, our week in Hearthstone, we already started the show just talking about what we've been up to. You know, just at least this week. Language Hacker, I was watching you just on your stream playing some Open Cups last night. So how'd that end up going?
Open Cup, first one. It was okay. It was a nice start to the experience. Strong 2-0 start, and then I kind of just flaked out and did 2-2. And I think after that point, it's not really worth continuing. So people usually drop it after that.
Yeah. How long did it take? Because I watched your first match and a half or so. But you know, some people are talking about some of these things taking longer or shorter, you know, like I'd love to hear like what your experience was.
So yesterday it actually wasn't that bad. But I mean, to be fair, I also left after four rounds and it didn't seem like there was that much downtime, but my games were taking a bit longer. I was in a cup earlier today in which every round you were waiting for like Warrior Mirrors to finish. Like after four rounds, it had been like 8 hours since the cup had started.
Wow.
Like every round, it was three or four Warrior Mirrors left over.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was your first time playing Specialist, right?
So I played a little bit in the Battle Rift League, but I have a limited collection on EU, so I got a little frustrated after a time, and I just stopped playing. So I only played for like a day or two.
Oh, okay.
But I had some experience with it.
Okay, cool. Bladeface, what you been up to?
Well, just got back from Taiwan, so trying to get adjusted to the jet lag. Really weird.
That's
hours.
Like 12 hours, right? Or something crazy like that.
I just do this thing where I just don't sleep for like 24 hours, and then I'll sleep for like 10 or 15.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's just what I've been doing, and I've just been trying to catch up on the meta because, you know, submit your decks for Worlds, you only have 8 days and then you lock your decks in and then the meta just continues to progress after that. But you don't focus on the meta when you're in Worlds. You focus on, you know, the 16 players and the 16 decks or the 16 lineups that were brought. So I felt like I was pretty far behind in the meta and a lot of catching up to do. So I've just been playing nonstop ladder and trying to, you know, just looking at what the high level grinders are playing and what's being successful in the specialist cups right now to, you know, just get back on top of things.
Yeah. Anything to share, or you want to still keep it like close to the vest?
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Nomi Priest is a top tier deck now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for the longest time, like Rogue and Warrior's just been like the two top tier decks, but like a lot of streamers are having a lot of success with Nomi Priest, and it's getting a lot more exposure. I know Meaty just hit rank one legend with it. I think it's a very strong deck. I think it can be teched against. It's not necessarily the best deck ever, but you know, I've been playing a lot of games with it, and I'd say like 20 to 25% of the time, I can draw my whole deck by turn 7.
What?
Not that I want to. I usually don't want to. Yeah, usually,
I was going to say.
Usually, once I get to like 4 or 5 cards, I have to slow down because I need turn 9 to have the Nomi Seance turn or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like against other decks like Rogue or Hunter that are more aggressive, you don't care. You just cycle through your whole deck like super fast. And you don't draw your whole deck by turn 7 against those decks because you have to spend some of your resources dealing with their threats. Mm-hmm. But against like Warrior that just like doesn't pressure you at all, you just like get to hold Northstar Cleric and Wild Pyromancer and just like have a turn where you draw a billion cards. So yeah, any deck that can draw its, draw its whole deck by turn 7, like 50. 20% of the time is pretty outrageous. I think it has a lot of potential. And I also want to add that I think the Elemental Mage is also very good. That actually might be a good counter to the Nomi Priest.
Which one is that?
Yeah, which one is that?
It's the Sandbinder.
The one with
you get, you get Mountain Giant, plays Archmage Antonitis. It plays Cyclone.
Okay, this that guy.
Right.
The reason why that deck can be strong against Nomi is because they run two Frost Novas. So, you know, you can just set up this board state where you just, like, you get out an 8-8, Nomi can't really remove it, then they Frost Nova you and Conjurer's Calling, and then Nomi just doesn't have any, like, good defenses against that.
Yeah.
And then they Frost Nova you again, or maybe they got an extra Frost Nova off Mana Cyclone or something, or maybe they
just play, like, a
bunch of mirror images or something.
Yeah.
Like, they can just stall out Nomi, and I think that might end up being a top-tier deck if Nomi ends up being good. And I think, like, that deck's already, like, decent, and it's actually, like, I think going to be quite good in Specialist because you can tech it. You can play Nomi in that deck as well.
You can play Nomi in any control deck.
Nomi's honestly, I think Nomi's like one of the best cards in Specialist just for how strong Warrior is.
Right.
It's just so easy to tech in. I mean, it's like a single card.
It's a skillless card. It's a miracle win card. And so I think any of those type of cards, it works well, you know, especially in a format like Specialist. So, I mean, for those of you not familiar with the Nomi Priest, you know, that might be listening or watching. So Nomi Priest is, you know, like Bloody Face was saying, it's definitely a deck that cycles a lot. You know, do you want to draw all your cards? And the premise of it is like, you know, you play Nomi multiple times, you know, like, and Nomi is a card that fills your board with 6/6s so that, you know, you have basically 42 damage threatening to the very next turn if your opponent can't deal with it. And, you know, as many... You know, people think, oh, well, Brawl does it. You know, Brawl does a good job and all this stuff. There's surprisingly not a ton of cards that deal with a full board of 6/6s. You know, so I think that's one of the reasons why it's so good. But I personally don't love the card. You know, I think it's interesting. You know, right now because the Priest has been around for like a month now, but for the most part, it still feels pretty fresh. And I think it's fine right now while it's fresh and people are seeing it for the first time, but I don't know. I just don't like the design of that card, and I could see it being a problem, you know, eventually. Kind of like I see, you know, Lissiana for me is a problem as well, but because it's just not crazy, you know, being played to a crazy point quite yet, like people haven't, or at least the developers haven't changed it at all yet. But you know, just what that card represents, you know, full board of 6/6s for what you're spending on it. I mean, that's just pretty silly, right?
Well, I think the thing with Nomi is that the format is so so polarized because of Rogue and Warrior. Like, there aren't any other tempo decks that can really be successful because they all get out tempoed by Rogue, and then they all get outvalued by Warrior. So, you know, normally when you think of Hearthstone, you think of like, you know, Zoo, maybe like Token Druidy type decks, you know, stuff where you like get on the board early and you like make some value trades. But I mean, they just can't compete with Rogue and Warrior. So once the format becomes like super polarized, it allows for Nomi type decks to, I think, be a lot better. Mm-hmm. I actually think that if Rogue was like nerfed, even though like it's kind of counterintuitive, I think the metagame would actually shift so Nomi wouldn't be as good. Because then decks like decks that could play like Mountain Giant on turn four could be like more successful. Like Nomi can't, like Nomi so Priest can't deal with Mountain Giant on turn four.
Yeah.
I mean, it could run Shadow or Death, but like how often are they going to have it if they run like one or run two or whatever?
What's funny about Nomi, and he alluded to it just with the mage, is that the problem that Nomi decks run into is that they just fill the entire board. So they can't play anything else. You know, so if you're in a position where you're freezing stuff, you can't silence like a, you know, like Frostnova or Doomsayer, or you can't do certain things you would normally do with like by playing a minion. So you get into these very interesting type of board or interesting scenarios where you have to play around them in a very, you know, unconventional ways. So that's cool. I mean, I think that part is very interesting when you create a different way, you know, like just a different path of a victory. But yeah, I would hate to see this all the time, you know, and I have a feeling we might be headed there, and that would not be a good environment to be in.
Yeah, it would be frustrating. Like, you know, this card was released right after rotation, right. So it is really scary to think about. Okay, well, what if more enablers come out down the line? We're gonna have to deal with Nomi for, well, you know, however long it is. Because it's more of a card you just like, oh, it's, you know, it's just like even odd. You first start playing even odd, oh, it's cool. Like, there's so many new archetypes that come out of it. After a year, you're like, I can't stand even odd. Like, every deck's just an even and odd deck now. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, it goes down that path when there's something that is just completely crazy strong, like Rogue is, you know, from a tempo standpoint, and all the, you know, just everything that it has right now, lackeys and everything. They have to fix that, right? Otherwise, they just keep going down the path of just basically power creep, you know, just adding power to it. And I think one of the great things about this reset was the power reset was something that I was looking forward to, at least. And so, you know, it's not too far off of it. I think there's just like a few things that are problematic right now. And, you know, we got a chance to see some of the stuff at World Championship. That's what's so great about, like, are so funny right now, is that Conquest is great. You know, like whenever things are all new and, you know, we get a chance to see, you know, a bunch of different types of decks and classes. But then when you remove that variety, it becomes, you know, less great. So, so watching the World Championship was like, it was refreshing, you know, just to find, you know, get a chance to see, even though a lot of you guys did play a couple decks that were similar, you know, we did see Zoos, you know, we did see a lot of, like, you know, actually Bloodyface, you brought some different decks too. I mean, and, Roger brought like, the most different, right? So I think it was Roger's really cool. Crazy, yeah. Yeah. But overall, you know, I think it's a great time for Conquest, but unfortunately, you know, we're not going to be playing Conquest anymore.
Conquest is long dead.
Yeah, it's long dead.
So it was definitely fun making a lineup where it wasn't just, we'll get into
it. It's not just Rogue War.
Yep. Later, but it's, I don't know, it's been nice having some, like, a different format to play with, especially when all that we're going to have now, at least for the foreseeable future, is going to be Specialist.
Yeah, for sure. Well, something, you know, really cool, you mentioned it just a second ago that you played on it, but something that was announced today that, or at least on Twitter that I saw, was this new summer series called Battle Rift from the Take a TV guys. And so let me show that real quick. Where is it? Here we go. And really, really cool. You know, this is basically like a mini league that's going on, you know, for May, June, and July. Prize pools. It's going to be divided into like three different mini seasons, I guess you can say, in this league, each a month long. And it's kind of like a combination of ladder system that feeds into, you know, like a tournament system. And, you know, you can kind of qualify for this end of the year LAN. Total prize pool, I think, for it is $35,000. So $5,000 for each of these individual seasons, and then a $20,000 prize pool at the end. So pretty cool. I mean, this is like really, I'm just really shocked, to be honest. Like, when I saw this, I was like, wow, Blizzard let somebody do this? Really? That's like very surprising, given that, you know, I've heard stories about them not allowing, you know, certain event organizers to do some of the things they wanted. So this is like extravagant. And if you, to be honest, it somewhat rivals what they're doing, right? Like in a way. So, yeah, what's your thought? What's your thoughts on what you see here from the whole Battle Rift? Maybe language, like, I'll start with you, given that you've played some of the things.
I was a huge fan when they had the Battle Rift before. I actually didn't even realize, I think, for the first season that it existed. I, like, near the end of the season, I saw a couple other players streaming it, and I was like, Battle Rift, what is this? I haven't heard about this. And it's kind of nice. I mean, it's sort of like a pseudo ladder where you just, everyone in the league can sign up between like specific hours and just queue, and it, you get someone random on the website, and then you just face them as you would in like a normal tournament, and then, or like a similar ladder thing, I guess. And it's just, they have their own MMR system that you work with, and it was just kind of nice. And they were using different formats too. I know originally they were using last year's standing. Mm-hmm. And with the announcement of specialist, they also had a league where it was specialist for a month. It seemed like a pretty good alternative to just ladder, because I mean there was a nice format you could do. I guess Blizzard must have kept an eye on this because it seemed pretty successful. There were a lot of like high quality Euro players playing in these, and I think they have a couple like a pro league and like an amateur league, so it's open to the like public as well for the most part. I'm pretty sure the amateur league can let anyone in. I haven't read all of this new announcement yet, so I'm not sure if it's very similar to what they had before, but my experience with it before was really nice. Only caveat was that it was on Europe and I don't have a lot of cards on Europe, but.
yeah I mean, it sounds great. I mean, it sounds like it's organized super well. You know, like the asynchronous element of the laddering, you know, like playing each other and stuff is, you know, I think very convenient for everybody. And quite honestly, something we've probably needed for a while now. Bloodyface, what's your take on this?
So like, I think it's really important that when they're introducing a new competitive format, that you have a way to just like click a play button and play whenever you want. Mm-hmm. Because when they took ladder away, they basically took the competitive outlet that most people had for playing Hearthstone and converted it to an open cup system, which has so much dead time. Like, let's say an open cup runs for 10 hours and you play like all 10 hours. Like, you're not playing all 10 hours, right? You're playing 5 of those hours and you're sitting around your computer doing nothing or God knows what for 5 hours. And you just have all this dead time and it's terrible and it sucks. But the nice thing about like this league is that like it eliminates all that dead time. If you want to brick off 10 hours to just like commit to Hearthstone, you can just play Hearthstone for 10 hours. You can just take breaks when you want. I don't think it exactly works like that. I think there's like an 8-hour window when like the league is live. But yeah, I mean, it's just like nice that like you can just go play whenever you want. Like, I think that's really big. I think that's my favorite thing about it, is that you don't have to like commit anything. You don't have to commit this huge block of time, you know, if you just like it, because it's really tough to do that, especially with like all the warrior mirrors going on, just like lengthening the rounds. I think they showed a figure of where the average round length before the new set was like 70 minutes and after it was like 100 minutes or something.
Oh,
so
wow, really?
Yeah. So the average round time length has definitely increased. But yeah, I just like the ladder format. I also like that there's two different systems. Like, I think it's good for there to be a rival because, you know, if, you know, it's the Master Tour system might not be for everybody. A lot of competitive Hearthstone players aren't even 21. You know, they might struggle for getting a hotel. They might have to convince their parents to let them go to Korea. You know, I know when I started playing other card games when I was really young, it was hard to convince my parents to, like, you know, travel, like, you know, outside of the country or, like, outside, you know, the continental area just to go play, you know, games or whatever. And I think that, like, just having an online outlet that other people that might not be able to commit to traveling, you know, even if they're not young, they could just have work or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I think that this is a good alternative. And I think it's important for there to be alternatives. I think it's really bad when there's just one thing.
Yeah.
And especially when that one thing a lot of people are complaining about.
To be honest,
it's awesome.
To be honest, this could turn into the feeding system, you know, for whatever GM is, you know, like who knows, right? But the thing is like we've seen other esports have alternative ladders and have a lot of success with it. You know, like CSGO had Faceit and different types of ladders like that in the past that the community adopted and some of them actually even preferred over you know, what the game itself had. And I think that's one of the things that Blizzard's been very worried about in the past, you know, just really some third party creating like the competitive environment, and they wouldn't have as much control with it. But but the fact that they're allowing this to happen now, I feel like, you know, they're opening up a bit, you know, about it, and it's a good sign. It's a great thing. I think that allowing, you know, the community and third party event organizers to help with growing the competitive side of things and help support it is good for Blizzard. Like, they don't have to support and pay for everything, right? Like, have some other people help out with it.
So, yes, exactly. Right? Like. Yeah, it also lets the people that are in Grandmasters stream something. Like, because right now people are just streaming Ladder, and Ladder's not like really that competitive right now. But, you know, this is like actually like another competitive outlet. So it's going to be nice for streamers as well.
Yeah, so kudos to the take, you know, Dennis and all those. I mean, I'm not sure who, maybe it wasn't Dennis specifically, but everybody at Take TV, like, definitely kudos for putting this together, because this is, you know, I think that it probably took a long time to get this together, and you know, they've proven they can execute well. They've always executed well, so I don't I expect this to go very, very well, and you know, can't wait to see it the next 3 months. Yeah, so sign up, guys. You can, you know, especially if you're in EU, you know, you can just join the event, go here. You know, I have the link in the notes, so if you guys, actually I'll link it in the chat real quick too, if anybody in chat is has a full EU account. I definitely don't, but you know, maybe you guys do, and you can play in it.
I mean, the good news about it being specialist, like one of the pros, is that you don't need a full collection. You can just try to make one meta deck.
Yeah. Can use that.
Yes, there are actually good things about specialist people. Like, I know everybody shits on specialists all the time, and so many people hate it. But like, there are some good things about it. I'm not advocating.
Well, especially when you don't have all the cards. You know, you don't have the optimal decks. Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the potential is. You know, and we will talk about Martin in a second. But another bit of news that we've got here is Blizzard announced. Let's see, what day was this? This was maybe yesterday, that they're asking us to save the date, because there's 2 days, May 14th and 15th, and I guess that's a little bit before when they're going to release the solo adventure, you know, part of Rise of Shadows. And they're inviting streamers over, like kind of like what they did with the expansion, inviting streamers over to stream from, I guess, Blizzard HQ, and get a chance to play some of the solo adventure for the first time, you know, before any of us can. So, you know, a lot, everybody's like, oh, yeah, you know, or I'm sure when they release this, they're like, oh, yeah, it's going to be another fun day. They can watch their favorite streamers, you know, like play the solo adventure, and it's going to be cool, and bring maybe hype up the solo adventure release and whatnot. But I think it's kind of backfired on them some, because the community has not really responded that way. And I mean, this is like what's on top of Reddit today, which is, you know, the general gist of what he's saying is that, you know, allowing streamers to stream early access stuff kind of kills the hype for everybody else, because it's, you know, it's new content. And you know, the one thing I want to mention first off is that this solo adventure is not like the puzzle, you know, Boomsday puzzle, where it's like, if you see what the answers are, then it's completely spoiled, and it's just like, you know, it totally ruins what the solo adventure content would be. It's not going to be that. It's going to be, you know, more of a replay. It's definitely replayable. I can tell you that much. It's very, very replayable. So you're not going to see that. But I think that there is still something to be said about just the fact that, you know, the hype is kind of gone a little bit, you know, when somebody else gets to experience it first. And if you're the type that wants to be that day one type of person, you know, that gets to play games for the first time on day one, you don't have that ability to do it, you know, and you can't even control it. You can't, you know, get in line and be, or what, maybe not so much for Hearthstone, but you can't even do anything to be the first person to play. So yeah, I mean, what do you think of Language Hacker? Like, are you in the same bucket here? Do you care? Or, I mean, is there any notion to this that you agree with?
I like some of the pre-release events they do, where they kind of showcase a bunch of stuff, or like give you a sort of sneak peek. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of for that. And a couple examples are that, like when a new expansion is coming out, obviously they have the primary card, what do they call them? I forgot what they call, but they basically have like a stream where they show 10 cards, and that's like they have
the very beginning, the first card reveal, right?
The first reveals they have, and that I think causes hype, because that's really exciting. We're all we're all watching and gaining that. But when they have something like this where they're basically showing everything, but having only some streamers go and do it, like, I'm excited that it's coming out, and I'm curious to see what it's going to be about, but all I'm going to do is maybe watch the stream for like 10 minutes to get an idea of what it's going to be like. And then I want to turn it off, because I kind of want to experience it myself, even though it's not going to be like you said, the Boomsday puzzle, where it's not just, oh, you know, the solution, that's it. But I kind of want to be able to experience it myself and like find all these crazy interactions that might pop up.
Right. Yeah. Blayface. feel the same way?
I mean, personally, I don't really care. I don't like doing any of the solo adventure stuff.
Yeah.
But I can definitely understand like why people are frustrated. Like when it's not as fun if you just like get to see someone else do it first.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I guess, yeah, like you said, it's backfiring on them because what are they really trying to accomplish? It seems like they're really trying to accomplish generating hype, right?
I don't know.
If they just released it all at the same time, Crip and, you know, Disguised Toast and all these people, they're going to stream it anyways.
I know. That's what gets me. Why are they giving them
early access? Well, what is this accomplishing? Are they trying to generate hype this way? I don't know.
I think you can speculate on a few things, right? I think that giving these streamers, some nice opportunities, it keeps them streaming Hearthstone, right? Like, these people could... You know, they could move to doing something else. You know, like Toast streams a lot of other stuff. You know, I think these days, still Hearthstone's his best performer, but he does stream other stuff, right? And Crip even streams some other stuff every once in a while, even if it's not like bounty stuff. So, I mean, for me, you know, giving the top streamers this type of thing, I think keeps them making Hearthstone content, which makes sense. I mean, I don't blame them for doing that. But you're right. Like day one, it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be the same, popular streamers streaming just from home. At the same time, we get to play, but we get to play along with them. You know, I don't think that there's that big a difference. So,
still kind of a sneak preview for some people, because for me personally, when I worked at a job, I would be sneaking, looking at a stream, watching other people experience it for the first time. Or, when I was in college and the new expansion, back when they used to do like these mini card expansions for like 20 cards or whatever, mm-hmm. I'd always be like having my phone out under the desk, like just watching people play it. That was kind of my freak or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a crowd out there that will watch it, and there's a crowd out there that will want to play it, and it seems weird to me to separate and just only cater to the people that only want to watch it, and basically everyone else that wants to play it, they just...
I mean, we have millions of other people that play, right? We have millions of people that play Hearthstone, and we have probably like 100,000 people that watch it.
Yeah, so it's a very small subset. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
It's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, they definitely have the right, good intentions with it. I don't think they're doing it, to really ruin it for us. I mean, obviously that would be terrible for them and their business. But at the same time, you have to wonder, is this actually what they should be doing, in terms of the community? And at this point, I think, we've kind of seen it with the expansion, and I mean, I'm the type where I want to play it on the first day. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to be that person that plays it. So even just these pre-stream things has been, pre-expansion things, I haven't really loved, because it's like, by the time I get a chance to play it, it's like the decks have already been somewhat, there's already been some figuring out of decks and people already playing, some decks with some refineness to it. And it's just not that same kind of Wild West that we experience on the first day, which can be really, really fun because it's like non-optimal decks, and getting a chance to experience the cards in that way. So, I think that we keep doing this. Like we keep previewing stuff, we keep doing it. And I'm not sure if it's elongating the excitement and hype, and I feel like that's why they're doing it. I don't know if it actually accomplishes that. So, maybe hopefully they'll learn from this, at least in terms of the solo stuff. I think people were already like, okay, the solo stuff's coming 2 weeks after all this, or 3 weeks after the expansion. That's already, like dragging it out. This is like, I think obviously the straw that broke the camel's back is everybody's coming out and really expressing their opinions on it. But yeah, so we'll see who it is. Maybe it's a bunch of small streamers. Maybe they're giving a bunch of small streamers opportunity. That would be cool, right? That could actually be a good way to spin it. But if it is just the same streamers again, then it's just like, oh, okay, it's the same type of thing again. But I guess we'll have to see. Let's see. Okay, well, anyways, I think from the standpoint of news, that's pretty much all we got right now. But I want to just remind you guys, or let you guys know, that this episode of Value Town is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. You guys aren't familiar with ZipRecruiter? It is a recruiting job site that that aggregates a bunch of different job sites, so you don't have to go and create accounts at a bunch of different ones and have to track them that way. The nice thing about ZipRecruiter is it sends your jobs over to like 100 different job boards, And they use like this powerful technology to kind of match, you know, who the best candidates are for whatever you're looking for. And 4 out of 5 employers who also post on ZipRecruiter get a quality, or who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And I can attest to that too. I've used ZipRecruiter to try to find an engineer. And on the very first day, I literally got like 50 candidates, you know, emails that sent me like 50 candidates to look at. So definitely never have experienced that with any other sites before. So anyways, right now with listeners of ValueTown, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ValueTown. And that's ZipRecruiter.com/ValueTown. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, let's talk about world championships, because, you know, you guys were, you know, two of the 16 people that I got a chance to experience going to the world champion. And to be honest, like, there haven't been any people that have gotten a chance to experience world champions, period, in the history of Hearthstone. So, you know, you guys are definitely in a select group, and, you know, wanted to have you guys on the show and get a chance to talk about it and hear just what it was like for you guys. So, Taiwan, you know, everything I've seen from tweets and everybody, they're like, oh, I'd love to come back to Taiwan. So obviously it was a great time, even just in the city and just in the country. And yeah, I wanted to hear about it. So yeah, Bloody Face, like, thoughts on just being in Taiwan for the World Championships and everything. Was it you know, was it as exciting as it looked for everybody, or any personal anecdotes you have about Taiwan?
I mean, Taiwan was amazing. Like, I love the city. I don't even know where to start. There's just so many things
food.
I love about
it. Food. Was food great there?
Food was great. Yeah. Okay, it was actually funny because at first, you know, I actually went with my girlfriend, and it was her first time traveling out of the country. So she got to experience that, and you know, it was really fun to be there with her, you know, for her first time experiencing. And, you know, at first, like, we didn't venture out too much, because when I got there, I had to prep for Worlds and stuff. And, you know, we're just eating hotel food. But once we stepped outside our comfort zone and kind of ate out, like, we started eating this Din Tai Fung, which is soup dumplings.
Yes.
Yeah, just, and we went to the night markets and just got more dumplings there. Basically,
street food is awesome, dumplings. Right? Street food is
so
great.
Tons of ramen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cheap too, which I also love. I'm pretty frugal. I went into the trip setting, you know, a certain budget, and ended up going like way under my budget, and I was very, very happy about that. Because, you know, it's Hearthstone is basically my full time job, and, you know, if you have a rough year, want to make sure you have some money saved up. So it's nice that this trip was relatively cheap, and we ate out all the time. So yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, my girlfriend and I, we were joking about moving to Taiwan. We loved it so much.
Yeah.
But
you're not the only one. Like, I feel like a lot of people came out feeling like that.
Yeah. The overall experience was wonderful. Like, it was amazing. I honestly couldn't even, I didn't even know it'd be that great, like, going into it.
Yeah. And just everything was easy, like transportation, and I mean, speaking English, was that fine over in Taiwan? Or
yeah, I mean, I just know a few phrases. Like, I can like say like hello, thank you, like how many pieces I want and stuff like that when I'm asking about food. But yeah, for transportation, they have a good train system, but we didn't really use that. We just used Uber and taxi. They were relatively cheap. I think like a 15 to 20 minute taxi ride only cost me like $5. It was just like,
wow.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's what taxis cost when
language,
you walk
actually,
into it.
And just like, the food was so good. Language Hacker and I, on the last day, we ate brunch, you know, me, him, and both of our girlfriends. And the cost for two whole like meals, like great meals and a drink, was $10 total. And if I go to somewhere in the States for something that equivalent, I'm paying like $30.
You can eat McDonald's for $10 for two meals, right? So yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, I love Taiwan. I'm a frugal person, as you can see. So, and I love food. So it just hit all the right notes for me.
Yeah. Language Hacker, how about you?
I mean, pretty much similar boat. Like, I traveled there with my girlfriend as well, and we kind of did the same thing. After prep was done, we went out a lot. And so beforehand, she actually went on Google Maps and kind of looked at everything in like a 1 mile radius and was like, all right, we're going there, we're going there, we're going there, we're going there. So by the end of the trip, we ended up hitting a lot of places. And these weren't even like, you know, high quality. Like, Din Tai Fung was like a very well-known restaurant there. It's kind of, these were all like holes in the wall, like nooks and crannies and stuff. And there was not one place we went to that we left and like, we're like, oh, we're not going there again. Everything was just, I mean, we wanted to try new stuff. So we went to different locations, but like every place we went to, I just have nothing but positive things to say about it. People are friendly. They were helpful. Mm-hmm. They almost always had like English menus. Sometimes they didn't, but like the servers would be really nice. They'd come over and try to like help you actually pick out what you want. And they'd explain stuff. Like positive experience absolutely everywhere.
That's awesome. Yeah, how many days were you guys there?
I think so we were there, I think maybe 10 days, give or take. I think Bloody ended up coming a week earlier to try and beat the jet lag.
Yeah, I was there for 3 weeks.
Wow. So like,
yeah. Oh my gosh,
that's awesome.
We were in there like 2 weeks-ish.
Okay, cool. So when did all the, you know, I know part of like World Championship and getting there early is you have to do all those B-rolls and, you know, like all that stuff. Does that take, a lot of people don't know, but does that stuff take a long time to do? Like all those interviews and everything?
To some extent, what they usually do is they take all the, or like they split up the competitors into groups and do like this group does this day, this group does another day. Mm-hmm. And otherwise you'd have the days off. On the days you're doing stuff, you're usually busy for most of the day. But they usually allot like 3 or 4 days before you actually have to do that stuff. So like you fly, like after you fly in, just kind of like fix your sleep schedule, kind of get rested. And then after a few days, they'll start doing the interviews and stuff.
Was everybody hanging out with each other for the most part? Like everybody that was there. I mean, all the GMs were there too, because they had the summit there, right? Like right after. And obviously influencers and whatnot. But I mean, was basically all the Americans and, you know, Europeans basically hanging out with each other, or everybody was kind of doing their own thing?
I mean, there's always contingencies, right?
Yeah.
Like you got certain friend groups, but yeah, I mean, for the most part, everybody's chilling and hanging out with each other.
Cool.
The GMs actually came like after World started, and we were there like obviously before World started. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, there's really not much to do. We just sit around and watch each other play ladder and stuff and just chill.
Yeah.
Some people are more serious and just like do more prepping type stuff. I did a little bit of both.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah. But let's talk about that stage, man. Like, so was the stage in person? I mean, I had a feeling the stage in person was more impressive than it was even just to on camera, but it was impressive on camera. How big, like, is there any kind of I don't know, type of reference you can give that to like describe how big that stage was? It was on the basketball court, right? So yeah. Was it like half court? Was it filling up most of the court? Like, how big was that thing?
So it's like a third court.
A third,
yeah.
Court? Oh, it's only a third. Oh, okay, that wasn't that big then. Okay.
I don't know. You know, I
mean, it was still pretty big.
Yeah. It was an LED, though. The entire thing was an LED, right?
Yeah. It was an LED. You know, for me personally, I was so focused on my matches. I feel like I didn't really get to take in what it felt like to be on that stage and what it felt like to be in front of that crowd. Like, it never really soaked in. Like, I honestly didn't even notice it. Like, it's funny to say, like, I didn't even really notice I was playing in front of the crowd. Like, it just felt like I was just playing Hearthstone, you know?
Was there a big crowd there? Because I don't think they represented it very well on the stream itself. You know, like, because the crowd didn't seem like they were, you know, super close. They seemed like, you know, the basketball arenas seem like elevated, you know, like the seats are a bit elevated and far away. I just wasn't sure if that was just the stream, you know, and their camera work versus reality. I mean, how close was the crowd to you guys?
Not very.
Not very?
Not very. Okay. Like, probably, like, 20 yards. At least
20 yards. Okay. Wow. That's pretty far. Okay.
The first couple of days, it wasn't super busy because it was on Thursday and Friday. And I don't think many people took days off work to go do it, but Saturday, Sunday really like picked up and the crowd did start getting really full.
Okay.
Yeah. That's basically good. Every time Roger was on stage or Bloodtrail was on stage, because they're both Taiwanese players.
Yeah.
The crowd was packed and like people showed up to go play it. As soon as their match was over, everybody left. Like, or most of the locals left, except with the only exception on like the top eight, the final day, like the crowd was like pretty packed like the entire day.
Okay. Well, that's good then. Yeah. I figured the Taiwan, the Taiwan crowd would be pretty solid, you know, compared to some of the other countries. I mean, I know like last year, right? Like in Amsterdam, I mean, there's just not as many people, you know, I think very centralized in Amsterdam. So, you know, a lot of people went out for that one, but, the local crowd itself, I don't think was like super huge. Even though the turnout was okay, but so this sounded like it was a lot better, which is great. You know, definitely great that Taiwan was able to host and represent that way. You know, getting into you know, just maybe just some of the playing, you know, the actual days and everything. Yeah, I mean, how was y'all's experience in group and just from the 4 days? Like, how did you? What day do you think was the toughest day for you guys, in terms of like maybe the amount of matches you played, or just you know, from the stress level and everything?
Yeah, I'll go first. Yeah. So like the first day, I mean, it kind of depended on what groups we were in. I played on the first day, lost my initial match, and then day two I played two sets, which I won, and then on the final day, I guess top eight was. Mm-hmm. And then on the final day, I played one more match in the morning. It definitely felt like the second day was a bit of a marathon. Mm-hmm. Like it's the white noise wasn't crazy loud. It's softer than I've had at other events, and I tend to get headaches after listening to it for a long time. So after like one set, I'm like, okay, but usually around the second set, my head starts aching a little bit. So if I did make it into top eight, and I was marathoning at the end, like at the final day, it would have probably gotten really bad by the end of the day.
What is the white noise exactly? Is it just, I mean, is it like, what is it?
The first day was just like kind of staticky.
Okay.
But the second day, after some complaints, I think they ended up switching to a different loop where it was like just heavy rain, and okay. it was a bit more manageable.
Okay. Bloody, does that affect you at all? Like, was it too annoying? Okay. Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
I don't notice.
Yeah, that'd be terrible, I mean, like, if it was like.
I don't notice anything, I guess. Like, I when you first walk up on stage, there's like tons of lights in your face, and obviously there's a giant crowd, but like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's like, it sounds like you can focus well. you're really good at focusing when it comes time. I'm just going to be kind of a generic question, but match, like the most notable matches to you, like the in terms of the matches you played, you know, and it doesn't have to be one that you won. I mean, it actually be one that you lost. I mean, but which do you think were the key matches for you that you remember, and you know, like you definitely have strong feelings about?
So I mean, for me, it's, yeah, for me, it's against Hunter Ace. Like,
yeah,
you know, you mentioned strong feelings. The night before, I was tossing and turning. I had nightmares. He kept playing a 10-10 Edwin Van Cleef on turn two, and like I was just so scared. I was getting high rolled, and yeah, like that was the most nervous I ever felt going into a match. And I don't know why. Like, generally speaking, I don't get like super nervous. Like, I definitely get like a little bit of nerves, but I definitely like, yeah, I think it was just more like, you know, it's the world stage. I'm going as Hunter Ace. Like, everyone thinks he's the best. Like, I've never actually played against him before. Like, I've never actually, like, I don't know what his play style is like. I don't know if he, like, plays fast. I don't know if he plays slow. Maybe I should have, like, watched his play style a little bit more to, like, help calm my nerves. But, yeah, like, I was just, like, super nervous going into that match. And I think that, like, yeah, I did get a little bit unlucky, you know, obviously with like the brawl and whatever. And like, yeah, he was on coin with Mage and had turn two Book of Spectres. Oh, I remember every game, just yeah, like, I don't know why, but like, the more nervous I am, the more I remember like every game, like in more detail. And yeah, even like, I'm still like frustrated because against him, I had a play where I just didn't play around Hagatha, and I could have Conjurer's Calling my Giggling Inventor, mm-hmm, and I had a turn where I played Scale Worm and traded to his Acolyte. I had a 5-3, a 2-1, and a 5-8, and he just coined Hagatha. Mm-hmm. And I could have Conjurer's Calling my Giggling Inventor instead. I know it's like kind of hard to picture the board, yeah, state or whatever, but basically that single mistake of not playing around Hagatha was really stupid, especially because back when Shudderwalk was around, I also had a tendency to not play around Hagatha. So for some reason, I had not internalized that Hagatha was a card, even though I've played against it many times.
He's a pretty good card, man.
and I'm pretty sure that single mistake just like cost me the entire match, because had I make that play, he can't coin Hagatha. He has to Hagatha scheme early. Then I can follow up with Mountain Giant. And basically, he can't play Hagatha for like three more turns. And then he basically has like three turns of like where he doesn't get extra cards or whatever. And then if I win that match, I have my Hunter against his Shaman, which is like a free win for me because mid-range Hunter never runs out of cards since, mm-hmm, I have double Dire Frenzy. I also have pressure. Like, I can literally fatigue Shaman as Hunter, and I can kill him. Like, the matchup's like almost free. So it's just like really frustrating that like this one single mistake, I feel like not only did it cost me the whole series, but it cost me like the chance of like winning worlds, like getting the top four, you know, we're playing for 100K. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's still like, I actually still have like nightmares about it. Like,
oh no, man.
It's taking me some time to process. I'm mentally fine. Like I'm not like depressed about it, you know, but like, there will be moments in the day where, you know, I just think about it and it still stings.
That wasn't nerves though or anything, right? That was just your tendency.
It was nerves and a combination of just me forgetting Hagatha was a card for a split second.
Right.
And me just like zoning in on the fact that like, oh, I don't want him to get two draws off Acolyte. I want to save my Condor's Calling for my Mountain Giant. You know, I'm like basically tunneling in on these minor details that don't matter.
Right.
And, you know, if you just zoom out for a second, just think about it, like, oh, if you just coin Hagatha this year, like that's just insane for him.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, and I think like when you do tunnel in, it is like your nerves because, you know, when you're like really nervous, you can't like access your higher level thinking. You tend to just go off like your experiences and you tend to autopilot a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my autopilot game was not very strong at recognizing the Hagatha was a card. So I think that, yeah, if I wasn't as nervous, I think if I was just playing a normal ladder game, I would have probably figured it out. I would have probably Conjurer's Calling it, but I think the nerves did get the better of me in that case.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is what it is.
I didn't actually realize that, you know, that play was, you know, so monumental. So, I mean, it's great that you're, you know, getting a chance to explain it to everybody because, you know, I think a lot of people probably that are listening or watching didn't realize that as well. And it's like these little things, right, that can really mean that it's the difference between lots of money and possibly winning a championship. So,
yep.
You know, people are wondering, oh, it's just, you know, a lot of it's just polarized or whatever. It's like, no. It's like when we're at this level, it is all of these little tiny plays that you're not going to see as a, you know, an average player. And, you know, you guys do. So that's awesome, man. Yeah.
If anybody watches chess out there, it's basically like if Magnus Carlsen versus like, I don't even know who the number two is right now, but just like if they just blundered a pawn, basically, you know, that's like throwing the whole game. At a lower level, you blunder a pawn, your opponent might not even notice it or whatever. It might not even be right. Feel it's recoverable.
Right.
But, you know, such a minor mistake at the highest level can just cost you everything. And if you rewatch that bod, Hunter ace coin Hagatha in literally like 0.1 second. Like he didn't even think about it. Just, as soon as his turn hit, he just went coin Hagatha just immediately. Like that's like how obvious of a mistake it was.
Right. Oh, I see. Okay. Language Hacker, how about you, like matches wise? I have to say, like Language Hacker, your matches were probably the most entertaining ones I watched. I'm serious.
I get that a lot. I remember playoffs, there was some crazy stuff that happened. Champs, there was some crazy stuff that happened, and now at Worlds as well.
No, your series with Killian was some really good stuff, you know, I was watching. I definitely had some questions for you too, but I kind of want to hear your thoughts first. Like what was your most impactful or just, you know, most memorable, notable match that you played?
I want to say that my third match of the tournament, where it was the rematch of me and Killen and the decider match of our group, basically the winner goes to top eight, the loser gets knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the most, I think, memorable one for me and also kind of the most important one. Our initial match was me against Killen and he ended up beating me there. I think I did play a little rocky there. There were definitely some mistakes and some takeaways that I got, which happened at like champs as well. I had a really rocky first day there. Going to the second day, though, against Muzzy's lineup, my lineup was very favorable. So I needed to just like keep my head up, don't do anything too stupid and just try to make good plays. And that panned out nicely. And then in the decider match against Killen, this is kind of an important match at this point. We're past the point where you can lose a game and still keep going. You're like every match is an elimination match now. And in practice, it didn't feel that bad against Killen's lineup. A lot of the times it was just even in our sets. It was maybe like 55-45, nothing crazy. It'll come down to the actual games and seeing what happens. And I can't even remember fully what happened in most of the match, but like my favorite game, even though I lost, it was me playing the Miracle Rogue versus his Bomb Warrior. Because I feel like in practice, I played that really I don't know. It's kind of a weird matchup because it's not like normal Pirate Rogue where I can just try to like out-tempo them and then kill them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can still try to do that, and I should try to pressure them so that they're not then pressuring me, but I'm not like running Leeroy. Most of my win condition is togwaggling something huge and then scheming it if I can, or just pushing as hard as I can to try and kill him. And I don't know. I just felt like that match was really nice because I had to just get past the fear of what if I draw a bomb.
Right.
There was at one point where I had like 6 health and I had 2 bombs left in the deck, but like I was kind of out of resources and I thought I had to sprint. Like if I draw bombs, I draw bombs, but
yeah.
And in the past I played kind of scared and stuff, and I was very happy in that match. I was like, I need to play sprint or I run out of resources. So if I draw bombs, then I draw bombs. And I ended up doing that, and then there were a lot of fireworks happening over the next few turns, and then yeah. I drew the final bomb.
You almost pulled it off, though, but yeah.
It was pretty close.
Yeah, it was pretty close. So I had a question for you for like the game before that, you know, like the one where it was the Shaman versus the Bomb Warrior.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever consider just burning cards the whole time? Like, you know, like when you had 10 cards and it was just like bombs that were going to do significant damage to you, you could just stay on 10 forever, right? And just burn them if you wanted to.
Not technically forever. So if he plays a single minion, at post Agatha, if you have, let's say you have a full 10 cards, there's some spells, there's some minions. You can play a minion if it can clear your opponent's minion and still stay on a full hand. But if you play a spell, you don't get anything back from that. So then you go down to 9. Mm-hmm. I did have a lackey in hand, and the lackeys generate 2 cards because it generates, it was like lackey or it might have been Ethereal Lackey. It was a lackey that gave me 2 cards, I think. Mm-hmm. Another maybe a spell, and then like the Haggatha spell as well. So at that point, I can use a spell and then that lackey and then maintain my hand size. But other than that, if I just don't do anything, what Killen can do is play a single minion and then just have that basically solo me. Because if I use a spell to deal with it, then I can draw a card. So there was one point where I thought I want to give him as few chances to just blow me out of the game with 5 bombs in a row. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure I have something on board to trade into something that he's going to play. I misplayed because when I should have been hand tracking better. He was pretty much out of everything and I could have just kept the full hand and then that would have been checkmate because he can't do anything unless he discovers mechs.
Isn't he also like fatiguing for like 6 or 7 as well?
Yeah.
It was still 5 or 6 turns out though. Like he was at 40, 50 armor.
Yeah.
Well, 40, 50 health, including armor and life. In the middle of the game, I wanted to try to stay close to a full hand, but still, so basically be able to fill my hand if necessary. But I wanted to at least just try to like preemptively stifle what he's going to put on board. Mm-hmm. But near the end of the game, I did kind of stray away from that game plan and I should have stayed on a fuller hand. I ended up going down.
You ended up still winning.
Yeah.
You know? But I was like, oh man, that would be so awesome if you just, you know, you just burned all the bombs. And for those of you who didn't watch, you know, Killen had a Bomb Warrior and, you know, he was definitely very vocal about just Bomb Warriors being, you know, like the right, you know, type of warrior to bring, which, you know, might have been right, correct. But you know, so it was kind of late in the game and Language Tiger had a full hand. And I think he might have burned one of them. And it was getting really interesting because I was like, oh my God, this would be so epic if you just hold a full hand the rest of the game and he dies of fatigue and you burn all his bombs. But it ended up working out that it was much more interesting, you know, when you started playing. So, but anyways,
it definitely is an interesting matchup because, and this is only something you learn by playing multiple games and like all the way through to like fatigue. Because from the Bomb Warrior's perspective, if you just wait before at least Yana and then just shuffle like 7 bombs in or like 6 bombs in one turn, that's an OTK. So from the Shaman's perspective, when you're getting close to fatigue, you have to Archivist early. Otherwise you risk actually just drawing 6 bombs if your opponent goes in for that, if you're not on a full hand.
Right.
There's some interesting like intricacies in the matchup.
Yeah, that's super cool. You know, overall, those of you that, I mean, you can watch it for this point, it's not spoilers, you know, anymore, but, you know, in the end, Hunter Ace, you know, after defeating Blood Ace, ended up moving on. Who did he play in the semis? He played Jing, was it Jing he played in the?
Yeah, he played
SM Jing. Yeah, he played SM Jing, and then ended up beating Viper in a very thrilling final. So that last game, holy crap, man. I was like, is Rafam going to really make a difference for the first time ever? And man, almost. He just ran out of steam at the end there. But that was, you know, pretty exciting and great, you know, I guess, ending to the World Championships. But yeah, so anyways, you know, NRH ended up winning Viper. You know, any thoughts on that? I mean, I know Bloody Phase, you obviously feel very specific about it, but I mean, Hunter Ace, you guys feel like he should have been the world champion, or I don't know, outside of yourself, obviously.
I don't believe in should or shouldn't.
Okay. All right.
I think almost all 16 players there
had a, yeah,
you can't say deserve, because like it deserves like a subjective thing, but I mean,
I don't think anyone played perfectly. Like, yeah. I don't think anyone did anything that was just like spectacularly amazing. I think everybody like was more or less like on the same level. Like, I'm not trying to take anything away from Hunter Ace. I think like, I mean, his shaman deck was like pretty sweet. I mean, mm-hmm. brought Ancestral Healing and Giggling Inventor.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. So definitely like props to him. But yeah, no, mm-hmm. I mean, I think he played well. I'm also happy for Viper as well, since.
Yeah.
He was fighting for Grandmasters, and he needed to beat Bunny Hopper in the finals to like lock that up.
Or in the semis, I think.
Semis, yeah.
Or sorry, he needed to beat Bunny Hopper in the semis, or have Hunter Ace beat Bunny Hopper in the finals. But yeah, so I think that after he got to that stage, he was pretty happy, even though he didn't win.
Yeah, no, that's great. I love. I mean, I definitely like Viper as a player, and it just, you know, just creativity, just his openness to trying anything out, you know, and bringing anything. I really, that's the one thing I love about Viper. And obviously he's a great player in terms of piloting decks as well. So, you know, one thing that we also got a chance to look at was just, you know, esports or ES charts, ESC ended up, or somebody ended up posting what the viewership was for the event. And, you know, I think the event did pretty well. You know, like even just for the English streams, it's been a while since we, you know, have gotten over 100K, you know, for any type of Hearthstone event, much less, you know, it looks like Twitch's peak was actually 273,000.
This is the total for all the world championship streams, like all languages?
Yeah, I think so. I think everything together, right?
Gotcha.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's concurrent, right? Like the peak, that's pretty
awesome. Yeah, it shows all of them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, like the Chinese numbers usually are double or higher, right? So this time around it wasn't, you know, it was like a little bit less than half, it looks like. So even the English stream being 143,000, that's way higher than anything we've seen in a long time. So, you know, that's great. I mean, it's definitely a good sign, you know, like it's good for Hearthstone to see those type of numbers.
Europe freaking dominating. Look at all the European flags.
We got to get some more North Americans, you know, like
all EU.
Got to get that China. Respect back, yeah.
We got a few quarterfinal spots.
That's true. Oh, wait, how many? Two or
three?
Three.
Yeah, Saiyan language. Right?
Yeah, that was
three
it.
Three EU, three NA, yeah. And then two China.
That's good for China too. Okay, well, yeah, I mean, you know, any, you know, again, like, definitely grats to both of you guys for a great year, you know. What was the prize pool for top eight? It was the prize 20, how much?
50K.
Nice. Yeah, that's nice. That's definitely a nice prize to kind of come home with. And
good weekend.
Yeah, definitely a good weekend. So moving forward, you know, obviously, you know, I think it's kind of a different path, you know, moving forward, I think for each of you guys. But, you know, I think one thing that we wanted to talk about here was just like the esports arena, which was, you know, I think a pretty good look at the specialist format with a lot of, you know, players that a lot of people know, you know, a lot of very notable players kind of right off the world championships and kind of going straight into this. And so, you know, I think a lot of people were talking about it and watching. Actually, not a lot of people were watching it. I mean, I think viewership was actually really low on it. But I ended up watching it just because I was really, really curious to see, you know, if it's actually people that I would normally want to watch, you know, or were playing it, maybe I would react a little bit better to this, to the format. But for me, it wasn't any better like watching specialists. So I wanted to kind of like talk about the event first and then maybe kind of expand into the talk about just specialists and the format and what you guys think of it, given you guys are going to be the ones playing it. So did you guys catch the Esports Arena event at all?
Yeah, I watched. Well, I didn't watch it, but I looked at all the decks. I watched some matches and I saw the end result. So yeah. Followed it.
Same. Any thoughts on it? Any
you know, shout out to Just Saying. You know, I appreciate somebody actually taking a risk for a very low stakes tournament. I would have liked to see people trying more stuff since it's like pretty low stakes, right?
Yeah.
Like I thought it was cool that he brought Bombware, but no, I mean, like everyone just flew back in from Taiwan. They probably only had like a day or two to prep, and it's pretty obvious that like Rogue's really easy to build, right? Like you just like the deck is already refined. It's great. And then you side into the Miracle Rogue strategy for the Warrior. And then you just have this third deck that you can either tech it for like Zoo or Mage or whatever you expect. It's very like ABC, very easy to do. And I think that's why so many people brought it. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool to see Racy make top four, you know, with his, you know, was he the only Warrior deck in the entire field? I think he was the only Warrior deck in the entire field. And it's actually kind of funny because does Warrior even beat Rogue in Specialists? I don't think it does. I actually think that Rogue is favored in the best out of three. If you look at even the results from the first Seoul qualifier, WOT1, he beat two Bomb Warriors in top eight. And I just think that it just kind of shows that like Rogue can't really be stopped. I mean, you have to really, really dig deep to beat Rogue, because you can beat Rogue game one. Like Warrior can beat Rogue game one, no question. But Rogue can still nut draw you. That's the thing. Like even if you're a 60-40 favorite, like Rogue can still nut draw you. But then Rogue just gets to take out like all their like backstabs and their wisps or whatever, and they put in like Togwaggles, Nomi, and sprints and whatever, and like they just never run out of gas. And like Warrior can never pressure Rogue. So it's just it's a very tough problem to solve. Like I don't think the answer to beating Rogue is with Warrior. I think it's like with one of these new decks, like with Nomi Priest or like this Elemental Mage or something. I think you have to kill the Rogue to beat them. You just can't
outlast them.
You can't play this control game because they're just going to have this secondary deck that's just like ridiculously, you know, overvalued with like tons of burn. It's just their deck is literally draw a card and like burn spell. That's it. And that's all they do. Like Warrior can only have so many healing, so many armor gain. They're eventually just going to die.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, what similar take, Language Hacker, or, you know, like in terms of just seeing all those rogues during that, that event?
I probably lost a bit of interest after like the third or fourth rogue mirror.
Yeah. Me too.
I mean, especially when all of them bring very similar lists. I mean that's what you do, right? And we see a lot of this in Open Cups too. There's not that much like variety. Like once people find the refined decks they're bringing, like if the meta gets mixed up and people start bringing like the spell or so or whatever the new mage we're talking about now, or start bringing more Nomi Priest, then. But I mean, you don't even really tech against Nomi Priest from the Rogue side. I mean, they can throw in different tech cards as a thing, but right now, while the meta is as it is, the deck's going to be pretty, I mean, powerful. The most recent Open Cup, I think, had like almost half Rogues, more? No, it was probably more than half.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big problem if you can't even counter it. You know, it's obviously, I think, one thing when you can actually build something that does beat it, you know, like build some type of lineup that does beat it, but lose to everything else or something like that. But it sounds like it's even hard to beat that at this point. You know, it's hard to do that at something that's going to be, you know, give the Rogue less than 40%. You know, so
it's hard to target it. I mean, yeah, if you look at World Champs as well, different format obviously, but there were most people left Rogue up and banned Warrior or did something else, but like very few people banned. Very few people banned Rogue? I think most people banned Warrior.
Most people banned Warrior.
Yeah. So if you look at the field, that all three people who didn't bring Warrior made it to the top eight, and I think all the banned Rogue strats made it to top eight, or most of them made it to top eight.
I mean, the thing is, like, in Conquest, Mage and Hunter were just insane.
Yeah, Mage was definitely...
Mage, if you brought Mage and Hunter, you're banning Rogue.
That's the thing. It was easier to just not deal with Rogue. And everyone who tried not dealing with Rogue did fairly well. I mean, Warrior had has its own problems with Boom, and you know it's difficult to get past a turn 7 Boom into all the Warrior things. But
Rogue literally beats everything.
Yeah,
Warrior actually has counters. There are actual counters to Warrior. Like you can play Conjurer's Mage, or you can play Dire Frenzy Hunter, or whatever. You can play Mech, or you can play Mech Hunter, or whatever. But there is not an actual counter to Rogue. Like, yeah, some people think that Nomi Priest beat it, but we don't have the data to support that. And I don't think we ever will have the data to support that, because it's just such a hard deck to play. HS Replay is always going to be biased against it, because it's one of those decks that if you make a single mistake, you just automatically lose.
Right.
So, when a deck has that high of a skill level and it might be a counter to Rogue, we're not in a good spot. Rogue needs to be nerfed.
Yeah, I think that's the general consensus right now, is that Rogue needs to be nerfed. And, I think it's kind of a silver, I don't know if it's a silver lining, but it's kind of good that I think the meta's in a place where I think specialists, the format, is most vulnerable or to looking bad, and it's when there is a single class, particularly a class, right, in specialists, that's overpowered. And because it's going to mask that later, and right now I think that it just shows you one thing, which is that specialist isn't flexible enough to avoid that. Where Conquest was, if you had a broken class, you just ban it, right?
I love Conquest.
Right,
you basically got to pick what world you want to live in. Do you want to live in a world without rogues? Do you want to live in a world without warriors? World without mage? It's whatever you want. You know what I mean? You get to pick
what world. It's dynamic too, right? We're going to see different things. It forces us to actually see different matchups and whatnot. So, with specialists for me, I've been worried since day one about this. And I think at this point, I'm just outright worried that this is what we're going to be seeing, in 2019, unless they make some kind of tweak, because it's the positives for specialists all end up being logistical. In my mind, I think that's why they ended up making the decision.
I agree completely.
Yeah, and they're trying to sell us that it's like, oh, it's shorter and it's better, but it's it's very obvious to me that the elements that are unique about specialists, we might not even see them, in a match. You change 5 cards, you play a different deck and you change 5 cards, we might not even see those 5 cards. So, there is, we you could potentially just see the same match over and over again. Usually it's not. Saying. Yeah, right? Usually it's not exactly, the case, but think about that, right? That's what they're putting their bet on, is that the unique element of the sideboarding, which isn't even a real sideboard anyways, that's a different discussion. It's just a pseudo weird version of it. It doesn't even guarantee we're going to see something different, whenever the game 2 happens and game 3. So it just shows you that it's not flexible at all. And with the meta, something that we can't control, Blizzard can't really, really control it either. You need a format that's going to allow for these imperfections, to the meta game. And they don't have it. They have the opposite right now. Picking a single class is rough. I mean, it's going to be tough to achieve that without having some type of, banning or something in the beginning to kind of change things up. So, I don't know what you could do, being a some kind of permutation of specialists, that might mix up the classes that people can play, because we have to get away from people just all playing Rogue, right? And banning, so nerfing Rogue is one way to get to it, but who knows? Some other classes get super strong again, and then the same thing happens again, and it's so much pressure on the design team, also.
Yeah, in the one class format, which is basically what this is, right? It's just one class you're bringing.
Yeah.
If things are balanced, even if the best deck is say 53, 54, and then second best deck is 51,
right?
People are gonna bring the second best deck. People might bring something even worse. But if it's just clearly Rogue way above it, or not even Rogue, but any deck way above or class above anything else, that's gonna be 70-80% of the people, right?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Rogue needs to be nerfed regardless, of whatever the format is. It's clear it's got, a handful or maybe a couple handful of very powerful cards right now, and other classes don't have that right now. So I think it does need some adjusting and tweaking, but what needs even more is just a format that's going to be, you know, that's going to have some margin of error for Blizzard. And man, I think they've set themselves up for, like, it could be pretty brutal, man. Like, I know a lot of people are looking forward to Grandmaster, and I am too. Like, I think that the actual structure is kind of, you know, interesting and different and very intriguing. But if you have a bad format, it's just going to make everything look bad. So I hope they, do you think they're going to do something about it? Like, any indication that you think that they're going to change anything?
Yeah. If I had $1,000 Vegas and I had,
yeah,
at a casino and I had to bet on specialists, yeah, to be here in 2020, I would say it's not.
Well, in 2020, but what about 2019? Like, that's what I care about most
almost definitely going to be here for almost all of 2019. It's going to be here.
I don't think it's crazy.
It's guaranteed to be here till Vegas, first of all.
Yeah.
I mean, and then after Vegas, then they look for feedback from the pros, because, you know, a lot of the grandmasters haven't got a chance to play with it. So Vegas will be, I think, like, their big tournament where they're just going to be looking for a lot of feedback. And, like, I think they're really going to pay attention to the meta there. And, like, big surprise, I don't think we're going to see, like, very much diversity if, like, Rogue's not nerfed. And even if Rogue is nerfed, like, if there's not, like, if they don't, like, hit that diversity and they don't, like, get better feedback about the format, I think then they're going to start reevaluating. So best case scenario, they start reevaluating right after Vegas.
So season two.
And then how long is it going to take for them to come to a consensus about something else? Months.
Yeah.
Like, best case scenario.
They don't have, like, a plan B. You know, I don't think they have a plan B right now. You know, it would have to be some kind of tweak of specialist.
Which, I think specialist is going to be here for all of 2019. I think it actually might spill over to 2020. I don't know. I'm just guessing, but just given from, like, my experience and, like, you know, I don't know. Like, that's what I think. I'll take my word for it. That's,
I hope you're wrong.
If I had to bet money on it, I would bet it'd be here.
Are there any pros that like specialists right now? I mean, do you guys know of people that actually are defending specialists and liking specialists?
I defend it for the sake of playing devil's advocate, because I think there are some like you said, it's there for logistical reasons. But yeah, personally, I don't like it. So,
okay.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that actually personally likes it.
So, I mean, the feedback they're going to get then, right, is probably going to be, you know, just critical.
And maybe they already know what's coming. Maybe they're already starting to reevaluate it now. Maybe they're already trying to figure out what's the next, you know, what's our next steps right now. But it's actually a super, super hard problem to solve. Like, it's not trivial at all whatsoever, because logistically it makes a lot of sense to have a single deck format, because it's easier access. You know, it's really important that people at the lower level can play the same format that people at the higher level. And if everybody's just playing Conquest at the highest level or multi-deck format, it's going to be really hard for people to want to get into it, because they have to literally invest in four different decks. And that's actually, like, a barrier to entry for a lot of people. So it's like, do you either want to have a better multi-deck format where other people have to invest a lot into it, and so maybe the competitive pool is smaller, maybe that's an okay thing, or do you just want to just, like, have the lesser competitive players have their own format, like something like single deck format, like specialist, and that won't be part of, like, the higher level HS esports ecosystem, but it might just be some, like, smaller level tournament, you know, like fun, you know, fireside gathering community type stuff. I don't know. Like, it's, you could go so many different ways with it, and it's really hard, because you just have infinite freedom, right? Like, making a new format, making a new deck format, you can literally go any direction you want. And I don't, for me at least, I've been playing Hearthstone, and it's not super obvious to me how to solve the problem.
No, me either.
If all you care about is just having a great format that's balanced, I think a multi-deck format with the ban, like LHS or Conquest, is great. But once you throw the logistical design constraint of, you know, having the viewers be able to replicate what people are doing at a higher level and the barrier to entry, I don't know how to solve that. Like, I don't know. That's hard.
That's pretty much been what the design is, or what the general notion has been, or accepted paradigm has been, right? Like, you want to have just everybody be able to relate to it when they're watching it. But you know, if this is the result of it, then they, you know, that shouldn't be the best.
Yeah, this is end result is obviously unacceptable.
Yeah, obviously. But here's another thing too, is, like, if you're going to do a single deck format, you need to do it right. You know, like, not this kind of pseudo thing with, you know, basically pick three decks, but you can only change five cards, you know, in the second and third one. It's not even a sideboard. You know, that's the problem with this too, is that I think sideboard would probably be judged based upon this as well. And
yeah, it feels like it wasn't critically, like they weren't critical enough. Like, I think from like an idealistic standpoint, it's like, oh, you know, it's more marketable because you can say I'm a specialist with this class and yada yada. But yeah, once you're like start criticizing the idea of it, there's a lot of holes in it, and
yeah,
it's kind of hard to see how they came to this conclusion.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know what their design process is. I don't know if this is just the brainchild of, you know, one of the highest ups, and then they just kind of morphed around it, or if they all came to this, like, I don't know, you know, I don't know how they came to this conclusion, but yeah, I agree. End result is not acceptable.
Yeah. No idea, but yeah, so hopefully something happens, you know, I think between, I guess nothing will probably happen between before Vegas, but, you know, I'm crossing my fingers that something gets tweaked.
Locked in.
Something tweaked would be great. Okay. Well, anyways, we're going to get some Q&A here, but before we do, I just want to give a shout out just to the people that support the show. That's our patrons, of course, a good number of longtime patrons that have been helping, you know, us do these shows each week. So I want to give a shout out to a few of them each week. So Raydan, Bruce L, or Bruce W, Michael O, Two Comma Kid, Cameron M, Paul H, Aaron B, Michael V, Code Chemist, Roger F, and Richard M, just to name a few. Thanks so much, guys. And if you, you know, like what we do, like the show, you can support it at patreon.com/valuetown and just make a pledge today. All right, so we got a question from Raydan, one of our patrons. He asks, do you have any ideas how to improve on the viewer experience for the first 10 minutes of literally any Hearthstone game, where all players are continuously roping, although it's painfully clear they're armoring up fast? The casters try to talk through game plans usually, but at some point, I start feeling sorry for them as they try to stay hyped and excited. I know players need to focus and concentrate, but by now it feels like they're doing it just because it's a thing to do. That's not true. But yeah, what else? Language Hacker, what's your take on that? Like, is there any way we can fill that? And, you know, like, maybe talk about, because I think the end of his answer there was really saying that you guys are just doing it for the sake of doing it, but what actually does happen when people rope in the first turn or two? What is the typical thing that people are doing?
I mean, so it's different in different matchups. Like in Control Shaman or Control Warrior, there's not a whole lot you're doing, but what you can think about is, okay, my opponent kept two or three cards. What kind of cards would they keep in this matchup? How is that going to affect the next few turns that are playing out? And it's something that it may not necessarily have anything to do with your current turn, but you don't want to wake up three turns from now thinking, okay, he kept this card. Now let me think about what it could be. Right. Like, you want to know in advance, okay, it could be this or this, and let me try to prepare the next few turns based on the fact that this might be in his hand.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the rope seems to burn a lot quicker when you're in the middle of a game on
stage. Doesn't
it?
Yeah.
So it's better to be prepared a few turns early. Like, a great example of this was Life Coach. Like, Life Coach was notorious for roping every single turn, right? But I mean, he was thinking about every single possibility. He was thinking about everything, every single card, like what kind of stuff you can expect in this game. So I mean, it's not just for it's not just for the sake of doing it. It's actually thinking ahead,
right?
Using your time.
Okay. Yeah. So in terms of like killing time, any of you guys have an idea for how to kill time during that? Like, I don't know.
I just hate that phrase.
Yeah,
like, I hate it if that's what it's coming down to. I don't think it has to be about killing time. It's more just like, I don't know. If I was like up on that desk, I feel like there's a literal infinite number of things to talk about. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not gonna, like, I'm
I
not
mean,
saying
I think
I'm
there could be
casters for what they're doing, but
no, I think casters are doing a great job.
I think they're doing a great job too, but I just don't think that you have to try to kill time, I guess. Like, you can talk about like what they're thinking about potentially. Like, there are other things like bluffing, for example. Like, maybe you don't want to play a one drop. Maybe you want to hold a one drop. Like, maybe you want to represent something. Maybe, I don't know. Like, especially if you're on coin. Like, if you're on the coin turn one, you could be representing a coin two drop. You could be representing holding the coin for a coin three drop. You could just have nothing in your hand and just, you might just want to rope it out just to try and represent having something. And they could just talk about like what they could be representing. I don't think that stuff is necessarily done a whole lot. So like, I don't know, for me personally, if I ever rope turn one, it's just so I'm trying to calm my nerves. Like, I know, like, if I'm just like super nervous and I don't want to like start the game yet, I just take a few seconds to breathe. and just kind of let the rope burn down, you know, just kind of like get kind of acclimated to the match. I don't know, for other people, I think it's like what Language Hacker said. It also could have to do with hand reading as well. Like if you want to figure out like what cards your opponents are going to play, you know, you might want to have in your head, okay, let me memorize my hand. Let me get accustomed to what's in my hand. All right, now let me look at my opponent's hand and get ready for when he plays his cards. Because it just takes a lot of mental processing to do all that.
Yeah.
Because you don't have Deck Tracker up. So I don't know. Like, I kind of didn't really answer your question, I guess. Like, what should they kill time? I don't know. I mean,
I have an idea. Yeah. I mean, I think that when there are these type of games where it is taking a long time, I mean, one thing they could do is just throw it to just some type of deck view, you know, just seeing the decks, the two players' decks. Like, I think that's one thing that they don't do enough on the broadcast right now is like seeing, allowing us viewers actually to be able to just take in what potential cards might come in. You know, right now we don't see that, you know, like Deck Tracker. I mean, everybody's used to it on stream. Everybody watches like the decks, the cards being played. And I mean, they have like full knowledge of everything. You know, on the esports, that's one thing that's really, really missing. So at the very least, in the very beginning, if you want to, you know, if there is some time that you want to give the casters to talk about something, and there's not really that much to talk about, you know, after maybe talking about the same thing that you're mentioning like over and over again, then show the decks. You know, just have like what's the deck matchup right this second, and just like get a look at it real quick. You know, so
and it's interesting because I think they do that, and I think like if I think about it, like Sottle actually does that sometimes where, you know, just during, you know, where they're roping, he'll like just start talking about like different tech choices they have. But I think it would be a much stronger effect if the viewer could see it on the screen and see it for himself and actually like visually see it. That would be a lot better.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Absolutely. So anyway, guys, if you have a question for us, you know, Q&A, definitely ask it in Twitch chat, or, you know, definitely check on the Valuetone Twitter. Oh, Shineblazer. Oh, he was like, he's saying Brian Killer recommended the system.
I think he's talking about specialists.
Specialists, dude. I think that people might be right about Brian like recommending it, but dude, I had a conversation with Brian like a long time ago about sideboarding, because we at one point were talking about doing an event together. You know, like I would organize the tournament kind of thing. And, you know, my idea was to do a sideboarding. It's just like, let's just give sideboarding like a real chance, you know? And my idea was like, it's kind of similar, but not exactly, but it was basically a 10 card sideboard, and, you know, just go with that 10 card sideboard, single class. And let's just see what happens. And, you know, everybody convinced me not to do it. You know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting, including Brian, I think at the time, like, the fact that people are saying that he was the person that came up with it, that would be really surprising to me, given that we came to that conclusion, or he convinced me not to do it because of that. So, you know, it turns out it probably isn't a good idea to do it, maybe just given what we've seen so far. But yeah, when people keep saying that, it always surprises me. So any questions, guys? Because if there's no questions, then we're going to wrap up. Like we've made some good time today. I give you maybe about 10 more seconds. See if you guys have any more questions. But I gotta eat some dinner, man. I can smell my dinner coming from my wife cooked, and they've already done they're done eating. But I'm like my stomach's been growling the whole time because I can smell it. I think the body reacts every time you do that. You know, I don't know if y'all's do. Like, if you smell good food, do you get hungrier by chance?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's part of being human.
Yeah. Okay, so here we go. We got some now. So what are your individual plans for this year? Shineblazer asks. Language Hacker? You know, I think it's probably more injured. I mean, obviously Bloody Face and GM, but Language Hacker, how about you? Like, what is your plans?
I mean, I'm going to continue competing. Obviously, I'm going to Vegas and hopefully qualifying for Seoul and probably the Europe Masters qualifier as well.
Awesome.
We'll see how the Open Cups go, but I'm also starting to like stream full time. And so far this week has been really great so far in terms of support. And a lot of people have shown up to watch now that I'm back to streaming full time and back on normal Eastern Standard Time Zone sleeping schedule. So basically that, yeah, try to grow a stream, try to continue competing, and kind of see where everything goes.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So you're full timing it now, right? Like you were part timing it. Like, how long ago? Weren't you part-timing for a while? I can't remember.
So I left my job in end of December. So after the new year,
yeah.
I started.
Okay. Like, yeah. Because I remember you.
Yeah.
You and Bunny, I remember the two guys were like part-timing. And I was like, man, that's crazy.
Like, I mean, it's difficult to do part-time because if you're working a full-time job, it's you do the whatever 8-hour workday, you come home, and then it's like you stream for an hour or two and you don't get much viewership. The growth isn't there either. So you actually have to stream longer hours. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to do eight hour, you know, workday and then come home and stream for another 4 or 5 hours. It just takes a lot out of you. Yeah. And then you're like, okay, well, maybe try to do on the weekends. But then, I mean, all your weekends are like kind of
shot. Yeah. If you do that.
Yeah. And then you take a weekend off to go do something. And it's like, well, I'm only streaming like what, 4 times this month now. It's difficult to find time. I mean, you try to do it, but it requires a lot of effort. So you really, really want to do it. Mm-hmm. So, okay. After I left, it became a lot easier to do it full time, but then I still had to take time off to prep for Worlds. So now I'm hoping it's just smooth sailing.
Yeah. Well, you know, Worlds should help too. You know, just a lot more people probably know who you are now because of just the coverage on Worlds. So that's probably one of those things where it is worth it. You know, like, I think when you're getting a stream going, it's worth it, I think, to get that kind of exposure versus, you know, somebody like Crip or something going to Worlds. It's probably not as worth it for him. Bloodyface, how about you? You've got a pretty good year coming up, right? So
streaming, yes. Mm-hmm. I want to stream. Haven't been doing it yet. Catching up on sleep, catching up on chores, you know, et cetera. I haven't even been back for a week yet. But yeah, I think that one thing I learned just like from talking to a lot of like the streamers, because a lot of the streamers were invited to the GM summit or whatever. But yeah, I mean, there's just like, from what I learned, there's just like no ceiling on how much money you can make on streaming. Like if you care about making money and playing Hearthstone, you should be streaming, because you know your time investment for how much effort you put in and how many hours you put in, you almost always you get it directly back more consistently by streaming, because you can build a community, you can build subs, you can get more viewers. You know, there's so many different ways to promote yourself and build your brand. Whereas with competing, you rely on your income just from tournament finishes, and you know, luck's involved in that, and you can have like a crappy year or whatever, and money can be more tight. And obviously you do get some exposure from like competing in events, but the real money, from what I learned, is all in streaming. And you know, I'm not in it for the money. You know, I left a pretty high paying job to play Hearthstone, and it'd be stupid of me if I was in it for the money. In that case, I could just make way more money, you know, doing some like computer sciencey, machine learning related stuff. For me personally, I care about competing. I care about being the best. You know, I strive to be the best. I care a lot about self-improvement. I feel like if I was a full-time streamer, I would stagnate really easily. So I don't want to like make the transition to streaming only, because then I question myself like, well, how can I prove, like, what are my long-term goals? Like, yeah, I'm grinding. Like I can get more viewers and I can get more subs, but like, what's like the end goal or whatever, just to be the most chasing. Popular person on Twitch. Right. Like that's not something I necessarily care about. Like I'm always been more of a computer. I care about like competing the best. I like problem solving, I like puzzles, and I like playing against the best in the world. And, you know, competing for me is, you know, I think my number one driving factor, but you know, I do need to live. I do need to pay the bills. And, you know, if I do have a crappy year, I want to have a fallback plan that doesn't involve me going back to a non-Hearthstone related job. So I think it'd be very good if I, so I'm going to try and stream more. I think it's going to be tough to juggle everything because, we got Pegas coming up, we have Sol coming up, and then, you know, there's like the GM stuff, but technically I guess I'll be on stream for the GM stuff. So it kind of helps, I guess, but yeah.
Cool.
Definitely going to be trying streaming more in my free time. So yeah.
Yeah, that's where all the sponsor money is, at least, you know, streaming. You don't even have to be a big streamer these days, and you can still.
Yeah.
I was like talking with, you know, I did the Streamer Showdown Smash thing today, and I was like talking to some of those guys, and some of them, you know, they have very small streams, you know, and there's still bounties out for those guys, you know, like they're not as big as obviously the big streamers, but they're still available, you know, like they make it readily available for you to be able to, you know, get these sponsorships or at least sponsorship money. So, I mean, it's definitely the right time or, you know, when you're comparing the two, it's not even a contest. It's very, very clear. Okay, well, how about one last question? Southern Smoke asks, most fun deck so far for each of you guys. What is the most fun deck you guys have played, or maybe there's a deck that's special to you that you just like to go to even when you don't care about winning type of thing.
So they actually asked me this question at Worlds as well.
Oh, boy.
And I just hadn't, I had no idea what to tell them because all we did for...
What's fun?
Yeah, right?
Like, what's fun? I know, you guys are too much competitors to... Winning is fun, right? So...
Like we were grinding 16 hours a day for like the first week of the expansion, just trying to find the best decks, trying to find the best decks. And then it's like fun. So I ended up telling them like Heal Druid because the last day I tested like 2 hours of that and it was kind of cool because I like slow control decks and that was fun. Yeah. But now I'm trying to play like some more Conjurer Mage, like Conj Calling Mage.
Yep.
I'm trying to make that work. Like that's what I've been running in the special, in the Open Cups.
Mm.
So just iterating that, but that's kind of it's I like playing big slow things, so that's kind of my style.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Bladeface, how about you?
I'm a big fan of Solitaire.
Just involved
me doing everything, and my opponent forced to sit and watch me just play a million spells in a turn. So yeah, Nomi Priest is definitely the most fun
drawing,
I have.
Drawing is fun, I have to say. That is one mechanic that is going to always be fun in my mind. So yeah, I think being able to draw that much might be super fun. I think for me, I've just been enjoying Mage. You know, we had Apex Void on not too long ago, and he had all kinds of different mages to introduce to all of us. So I think getting a chance to play some of the different ones, not just, you know, your Khadgar type of, you know, Conjurer Priest, but just some other different tempo type of mages has been pretty interesting. So yeah, something like that. Mage is definitely a really fun. I think that for the most part, people like the mage class right now. You know, they did a good job with it, at least in this expansion. So, you know, I think that's been the one for me. All right. Well, anyways, why don't we wrap up? You know, it's been awesome having you guys on. And, you know, hopefully we can do it again sometime down the road. You know, maybe when you guys win, you know, Vegas or Seoul or one of those big events coming up in 2019. But anyways, you know, thanks for coming on, sharing your experience and everything and getting your insight on just everything that's going on. Bladeface, you want to do some shout outs before we take off?
Yeah, shout out to my girlfriend. She travels with me to pretty much every Hearthstone event I go to. Very supportive. Makes the traveling experience a lot more enjoyable, a lot more fun. I mean, who doesn't want to do, you know, who wants to do it by yourself, you know?
Yeah, travel the world with somebody, you know? Like, that's definitely the way to go.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, shout out to my team Lazarus for, you know, help sponsoring me and, you know, they've been good to us.
You're both on the same team, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I kind of remember that. Sorry.
No worries.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Language Hacker, how about you? You want to do some shout-outs?
I'll echo what Bladeface said. Thanks to my girlfriend for putting up with me, traveling with me as well to Taipei and hopefully to Vegas. I actually know we booked Vegas. So Vegas, hopefully Seoul. We'll see where the rest of the year takes us. And shout out to Lazarus. They've done a good job for us. We got some cool swag from them too. That was nice.
Awesome. All right, and thank you guys for doing the show, everybody for tuning in. I know it's been a little bit later. One announcement I do have for the show that you know, I just wanted to mention, it's you know, lately I'll just kind of be a little bit transparent about everything. Lately it's been a little bit more difficult for me to do the show each and every week. So I think that instead of like struggling and trying to like really rush the shows, which I kind of feel like we've been doing for a little bit now, that it might be better for us just to do them bi-monthly, you know, just twice a month instead. You know, to be honest, there's not like a ton. There's some weeks that are super slow. Like, I'm just being completely honest. And it's, you know, we don't talk that much about gameplay these days. You know, we're definitely more covering, you know, the community and esports news and things like that. So I think we'll probably, you know, end up going to you know, every 2 weeks instead. And, you know, kind of going from there. Also, I just have been having trouble with time too. You know, I've been working on a few things that are, you know, hopefully you guys will hear about soon, but it's been taking a lot of my time too. So, you know, I definitely want to continue doing the show and being part of the Hearthstone community. There's no question about that. But, you know, I think that it's realistic. It's not very realistic for me to do a good job like each and every week. So I definitely want to make sure when we do the show, it, you know, it is something that, you know, you guys can be happy about. So, I just want to let you guys know that, but yeah, that's going to be it, guys, for the show. So if, you can check out the VOD at youtube.com/ChamMV, and you can listen to the show on all the audio channels. So iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and SoundCloud.com/ChamMV. And that's going to be it, guys, for this week. So for Bloody Face, Language Hacker, and myself, ChamMV, we'll see you next week, or maybe in 2 weeks. Sorry. Got to get used to that, too.